Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael. As we get started, I will say that you're a little faded tonight.
I'm a little faded tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I will speak up, and I will see what technical help we can get here.
All right. See if someone can brighten your aura.
Exactly. Turn up my knob a little bit.
Yeah.
Great. Sherry, can I share a little something I noticed?
Yes, please.
So I used to have a practice of, over lunch, during my workday, listening to some of the archives.
Uh-huh.
And then I didn't do that for a little while, and I've recently started that up again.
Uh-huh.
And it's just great. It's a real sort of interruption with whatever conditioning is going on, whether it's kind of subtle or obvious. It's just a real, you know, come back here.
Uh-huh.
And it's just great. It feels very supportive.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of what we were talking about, I think, last week with the reflective listening buddies.
Yes.
You know, that people say it's so wonderful to have that. Well, and I think you were saying it, as a matter of fact, my memory is serving me well tonight, that you're going along and then all of a sudden you get interrupted to do this thing that requires you to be present.
Yes.
It brings you to the present. And what a gift that is, because if we're not careful, we can wake up in the morning, perhaps already unconscious, or move
yes.
quickly toward unconsciousness.
Yes.
And conditioning will make sure that we stay that way through the rest of the day.
Yes.
And that's no way to live a life. So
no, it's not.
Yeah, that's great. Anything like that we can do, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And we have all these archives.
Yes.
People might as well enjoy it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sherry, I wanted to mention also that you have an email class coming up.
I do. I do. I'm kind of excited about it, as a matter of fact.
I am, too.
Yeah.
About 2 weeks or so.
Huh?
About 2 weeks or so away.
Yeah, the whole month of February, we're going to be looking at creating universes.
Yes.
Which is not something that we are often aware that we're doing, and yet it is exactly what we're doing.
I was just going to say, I mean, there's my universe, which is the universe, right?
The universe, and we all live in your universe, don't we?
Right.
And then, of course, we go along and we find out that, whoa, as far as I can tell, nobody else is living in my universe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as you've said, it's a universe.
Right.
It's me and me only.
Me. And sometimes, of course, you know, the awful place we get to when we're doing practice is realizing, well, I'm not even sure I'm inhabiting my universe. Maybe there's nobody home sometimes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Great.
And
now I can mention some more items on the calendar if you'd like, or we can go straight to
Michael?
Our first caller.
Michael?
Yes?
You're so far away that I have difficulty hearing you, and as you may have noticed, I'm tending to talk over you more than usual.
Oh, goodness. Goodness. Well, that's not going to work, is it?
No. So you said something. I'm sure it was important. I didn't get it.
So I can mention a few more items from our calendar coming up, or we can go straight to our callers.
Oh, the calendar sounds nice, as long as we don't leave anybody out in the dark.
Okay, I'll mention a couple of items.
All right.
There is still nothing wrong with you.
Yeah, talk about exciting.
Yes.
Yeah, the first first ever real follow-up to the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Yes.
Because what happens is, as you sort of indicated, you know, you used to listen to the archives on your break at work, and then you stopped. And we do that all the time. And we don't know exactly when we stop or why we stop or anything else. We just notice one day that, huh, I stopped doing that. And so we do There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, and we're all, you know, excited and thrilled about life and ready to go. And then conditioning just slowly wraps its little tentacles around us. And pretty soon we're back in living in a world of believing that there's something wrong. So to have a little refresher course in which we get to be reminded that, no, in fact, there's still nothing wrong, very handy.
Yes. And for those folks who have not done There's Nothing Wrong With You, there are a couple of those coming up as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
True.
And a lot of other fun things. We it's true. We only have about... we don't even have half the year's schedule up, but I think we have something for just about everybody on there. And as we go along, we'll add more things just as quickly as we can and like that.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Let's go to our callers.
Okay.
I'd like to welcome Jen from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Jen?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
How's things in your world?
I called last week and I got out of work again this week, which I probably shouldn't make a habit of this too much, but I got out of work again because I'm still, I don't know, there's a lot going on just content-wise, and I'm just still kind of feeling a lot of depression, and it feels like that kind of downward spiral of just getting stuck in it and not being able to kind of do the things that might take care of me to help some movement of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
So let me ask you this. Was there more about that, or can I leave?
Nope, that's fine.
Okay, so do you have a copy of the depression book?
I do.
And have you taken it out to read it?
No.
No.
That might be a good idea.
And, you know, I always encourage people at moments like this not just to read it, but actually to do the exercises in it.
Yeah.
Because it's that place that I project. You're in that place that all of us who are have an intimate relationship with depression know. Here it comes. It starts in. Oh, no. Oh, no. And we start, backpedaling as fast as we can and trying to get away from it. And the panic is growing because we know where this is headed. And the more we try to get away from it, the more it grabs a hold of us until, you know, we're just thoroughly miserable. So the depression book is a great reminder that trying to run away from evil is not the way we want to go. And because, as you know, where it's two issues, right? It's the person who's depressed, which is that's not actually a problem. It's what self-hate does with the depression that starts making it a problem for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, being the wrong person everywhere because of being depressed,
And so here's this poor little depressed person, and all everybody wants to do is get as far away from her as possible. And, of course, that's really depressing and sad and upsetting. And so, again, to stop and turn that around and realize, okay, well, you know, I signed on for ending suffering, right?
Yeah.
For living in conscious compassion and awareness. That's what this practice is, and that's what we've all agreed that we're here for. And then something like that happens to us, and we get to... very quickly to a place of, but not that. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to embrace that. I'm afraid of that. That's too big, too hard, too scary, too whatever. And, of course, it's not. It's just somebody who's really struggling and suffering and needs a friend and needs to be taken care of, and you're capable of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I've, you know, I've seen that happen before, and I know that it's possible again. It's just been, you know, it feels kind of sticky where I am and a little bit hard to hard to remember what you're saying right now. So, yeah.
Oh, it's really hard. It's that place we always talk about. You know, I'm in one reality, and then suddenly I'm in another reality. And in this other reality, I can't remember that I know how to take care of myself. Or that there, in fact, the fact that I'm feeling depressed does not mean that there's something wrong with me. You know, it's just all of those things become just about unavailable to us.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, at the time we need the most.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why grab the depression book, you know, start planning your depression party. Because,
yeah.
You know, you want to do that. Get out the things that you... You know, ask her what she'd like to do, you know, what would make her feel loved and cared about and taken care of, and then make that list and start assembling all of the things that she wants and needs. You know, I always discourage people from journaling. This would be a good time to journal. You know, let her talk. Do that non-dominant hand thing so that she gets a chance to talk to you about how she's feeling and what's going on with her, and invite her in.
Okay.
Let her know she's special. She's not some kind of leper that you're just, all you want to do is get away and pretend that she doesn't exist. She's a very important part of the whole structure.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I've been wanting to try to exercise too. Like, I'm not doing, you know, any kind of physical activity right now. But, you know, I think it's been coming a little from a self-hating place. Like, you know, you better whip yourself into shape, kind of a place. But I would like to somehow find. Oh, I think that would help a lot. I mean, usually that seems to just help kind of move the energy and just
Absolutely.
You know, everything feels
Absolutely.
Better.
It's
but I've
critical.
Been. Yeah, I've just been not able to, I don't know, I'm just stuck with that too, I guess.
Well, and so here's the part for me that's helpful. Because, you know, the last thing you want to do is go exercise, because if you had energy to exercise, you wouldn't feel so rotten. And then, of course, again, the real problem is not the fact that you're depressed. But self-hatred. So now you're getting information that the way to become the right person is to beat yourself into shape. And so actually all that you need to do is just take her for a walk. You know?
Okay.
Not go get exercise. Just go for a walk. What's the weather like where you are?
Well, it's really cold.
It's really cold?
Yeah, it's pretty cold and miserable, but, you know, I can bundle up.
So, that's right. So, you know that quote, there's no such thing as bad weather, just inappropriate clothing.
Yes.
And so, you know, you're used to living in bad weather. So,
yes.
So you can, put on nice warm things and then just go for a walk. Walk and, you know, enjoy being where you are, enjoy being with her, if you can, enjoy being outside. And just walk until that you feel that energy move, and then go about doing the next thing. And, you know, the other thing you can do, does it say this in the depression book? You know, is there a kind of music that you really like?
Yeah.
What do you like?
I like drumming music and world music kind of stuff, yeah.
Well, how perfect is that? So, you know, you get your music, and turn it on and start dancing.
Okay.
Just dance until the energy is moving and you feel great again, and then go on to the next thing. And, of course, what you'll watch is you'll feel great, and then as soon as you stop, the voices will want to come in and start talking about what's wrong and how this and that and something else. And you know what that is, and you know what to do with that. That has nothing actually to do with depression. That's self-hate.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the walking and stuff sounds good, and I'd like to try to do that. I think what I'd like to do is be able to do it in the morning, because it's definitely like, you know, I'm just waking. I mean, I'm sleeping through it and waking right up into the conditioning. And then I go to work, and I usually work through the day and often at night too, so there isn't much opportunity for the exercise. But that's where it's turned into, like, I've got to get myself on a program, because it means I have to get myself up when it's, you know, still dark out and it's cold and stuff, if I'm going to get the exercise in, you know?
Here's the deal. That schedule would depress anybody.
Yeah.
You get up and go to work when it's still dark. You work all day and never do anything but work. And then you work into the evening?
Well, I work as in, I do have a couple nights a week that I have to work for my job, but the other two nights I do, Monday through Thursday I do this, then the other two nights I teach yoga, which I enjoy a lot more. I still do get home, you know, it's dark when I get home and everything too, but I enjoy the yoga more, so, but yeah.
But here's the deal, you know, I think, this is my own personal little philosophy, obviously, but it's really important to give yourself a message that you are important. And so to set up, to do whatever is required. Now, almost everybody that I say this kind of thing to goes, oh, no, that's not going to work with that. Okay, but you can figure out a way to say to whomever you work for, look, you know, I'm happy to work a lot of hours here,
mm-hmm.
and I need this time to take care of my body. Because
mm-hmm.
if I don't, then the whole thing comes crashing down. How can we make that work? And people will make it work.
Okay.
Do you believe that?
Yeah, I do, because, I mean, you know, I see, like, I'm not at work today, you know, largely because I can see, like, this is going to break down. I'm not, you know, I can't keep working, you know, keep doing this way, because it's just not sustainable for anybody, and I'm not going to have anything good to offer at work. So, yeah, I think, you know, my boss would be open to that. And
absolutely. And it is such a powerful statement to you that you matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just don't get that information enough.
Yeah.
And, of course, conditioning wants to say, oh, well, that's so egocentric and so selfish and so. No, it's not. Because what you immediately came up with was, if I don't take care of myself, I don't have anything to offer anybody else. And that's true.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that's true. And so it takes a lot of, actually, a lot of strength and a lot of self-discipline to prioritize yourself in the kind of way that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it is your life. I remember, was it last week or the week before or something like that, the woman who, the voices wouldn't let her do art.
Mm.
It was a waste of time, and our conversation was, but whose time is it? Isn't it your life? Don't you actually get to do what you want with your life? I mean, shouldn't that, we're Americans, for Pete's sake.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Don't get me started on that. But, you know, it is set up as a kind of an understanding that we have that this is your life, and you get to live it within reason in a way that you choose. And we forget that. We forget that nobody's making this up but us.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the thing, I mean, my job is actually pretty flexible. I mean, I don't even have to work as many hours as I do. It's just I often will, you know, I think try to get my adequacy met there or whatever, so I'll put the job above everything else, and I'll, you know, stay later than I need to or do, you know, do more than really is part of the bargain. I mean, there is more flexibility that I definitely can get there. It's just that you know, I don't do it.
Yeah, you listen to the voices of self-hate instead.
Yeah, that I'm not doing enough work, or I need to do more, or whatever, and yeah.
Yep. So for this this week, might that be possible? This week you put Jen first and work second, and just see how that is.
Okay.
Yeah. First you take, you know, it's the sharpening the saw in Stephen Covey's world, or, you know, taking care of the goose that lays the golden egg, or however you want to, you know, making sure that the one who's going to go to work is really fit to do the job.
Yeah.
Okay, let us know.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael and Sherry. Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You are listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Monique from California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Hello there, Sherry.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Great. What's going on?
Well, I have just some observations about the 30-day retreat and the Making Change for Good.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've tried to do it, I think, 4 times now, and I can't ever get past the second day.
Can't get past the second day.
No, I even did the email class, and like once I hit the second day, I think what I do, I sort of like forget is what I notice. And then once I forgot for one day, well then, why would I want to start again?
Why pick it up again after that,
right?
And now, we're both intelligent human beings, so you know that's bogus, right?
I know it's bogus, but it seems really real.
Well, and that's, I mean, that's it, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
It is bogus, and it seems really real.
Yeah.
We know it is. We know it's absolute foolishness.
Right.
And yet, it seems so real that it dictates not only our behavior, but our emotional reaction to life,
mm-hmm,
and to ourselves.
Yeah, and one thing I've noticed is that, I mean, I know the voices precede the feelings, but this happens obviously in other areas. This is a process where I start something and then I don't continue it, whatever regimented plan I've done, and so I don't do it. And it's like I don't get, there's not something in my head I can notice that says something, I just feel a certain way.
And it's the way you feel that causes you to stop.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, you might not find that as exciting as I do, but I find that really exciting. Because if we stop and think about it, what in the world could there be about a feeling that means you need to stop this and you need not to continue?
Mm.
Okay? Because it's twofold, right? The feeling means you have to stop.
Right.
It also means, and you can't take it up again.
Right.
So what in the world kind of feeling could that be?
I don't know, but it's pretty strong.
And you can sense that I'm going to encourage you to find that, to answer that question, right?
Okay.
And so this truly is my best encouragement to you, and I hope that you will stay in touch with us and let us know what happens, because it's so big for all humans. So you start the program, and you look for that feeling that's going to stop you.
Okay.
And when the feeling is there, you turn the microscope on that feeling. Where exactly is it in your body? How big is it? What are the borders of it? What is the texture of it? What is the color of it? What?
Mm.
Because it's controlling your life and making you very unhappy. So it better be a super significant, powerful, meaningful sensation.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, you'd think so, but I think about other feelings or things I've felt in my body, it's definitely not as painful or something like that. And I know it sits right in my stomach, right around my belly button area.
Uh-huh.
But I can kind of even recall it, because this is a feeling I'm very familiar with, because I feel it a lot.
Uh-huh.
I feel a lot, and I just know the feeling that comes up often that stops me from... It's interesting, because there are certain times when I feel it that I can, even though I feel it, will still do whatever it's stopping me from doing, or... But there's other times that I can't. So I will still feel it sometimes, let's say before it's time to meditate, but I meditate anyways.
Right.
I always feel it before I exercise. It is always there, but I do it anyways.
Uh-huh.
But there are some times when it is...
And that's really interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That there are places where you've overcome it and proved that it does not actually mean anything.
Right, right.
And the reason I project is because, hey, I have to exercise. So,
right.
Or, hey, I've got to meditate. So
right.
We're just going to have to get over this and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so may I project
wildly
onto your life experience?
Sure.
Okay, and so this will just give you a place to look. And maybe you've heard me talk about this before, but are you familiar with chakras?
Not a little bit from yoga, but not very much. And some of the stuff that you've talked about, but not really.
Okay. So there's the first chakra is at the hips. You know, it's the genitals, it's the tip of the spine, like that. And it's so the first chakra, the color associated with that is red, and it's the survival. It's what makes people want to have babies. So that the species will continue. And we get into the most bizarre things are a result of the first chakra. It's the reason that people don't want people of different races or different ethnicities or different religions to intermarry. Those are first chakra. It's a tribal thing. This is our tribe. This is who we are. You're not of our tribe. Therefore, you threaten our survival in some basic kind of way. And, okay, so we can look around the world and see how the extremes that people will take that to, killing other people and that sort of thing, simply because they're of a different tribe. So then the second chakra, the color for that is orange, and it's kind of where you're describing it. It's just right below the navel.
Okay, yeah.
And that's emotion.
Hmm.
And so that's where we feel emotion, that's where emotions get stored, like that. Right up above that, in the solar plexus area, third chakra, that's the will center, and it's yellow. The color for that is yellow. Just above that, the heart chakra, the color is green. And it's an interesting one. It's unconditional acceptance. Is a whole additional conversation. It's not acceptance. It's unconditional acceptance. Then the fifth chakra in the throat is blue, and that's a personal expression. It's a personal identity. Who I am, what my karma says I am, and what I believe myself to be, and like that. The middle of the head, forehead, eyes, that sort of thing is the sixth chakra. And the color is purple, and it's where we know, we understand, we have opinions, right? We think, we decide, all of that's carried in the sixth chakra. And then the top of the head, the color is white, and that's the seventh chakra, and that's transcendence, it's wisdom and that sort of thing. Okay, so what often happens is that as children are growing up, they learn that they cannot just be as they are, because that leads to a lot of rejection and often punishment.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're two. It matters if you're two.
Right.
You can be too upset, too whiny, too demanding, too sensitive. You can also be too loud, too happy, too giggly, too, okay? And so children learn that from the sixth chakra says, you should be. Okay? You should be. This is how you should be. And then it learns to translate that to the third chakra, the will center, and to control the emotions in the second chakra.
Oh, interesting.
That will lead a person to be and do things the sixth chakra says you should not be and do.
Huh.
If you let those feelings out, something terrible will happen.
Right,
you'll be the wrong person, you'll do the wrong thing, you won't survive.
Right.
So children learn to control, and the word I like to use for that, for the method of controlling the emotion, is depress.
Mm-hmm.
People learn to depress their emotions. The third chakra, we are the most anxious nation on the planet. Third chakra, will center, anxiety center, the head, conditioned mind, the voices with all their shoulds and you have to and you must and that sort of thing. So I'm going to suggest to you and encourage you to see if this model kind of makes sense out of what you're looking at, that what you're feeling there is the third chakra clamping down on the emotions.
Wow.
And the best way to make sure that you don't do something that you're not supposed to do is for you not to feel something you're not supposed to feel, that if you feel it, is going to lead you to doing something that you shouldn't do.
Yeah, and I, just as you say that, I mean, I can really, I can relate to, I've never wanted, I don't like to be emotional. I really don't like it. And when it happens sometimes and I am emotional, I'm very scared of it. So,
there it is.
I mean, I can relate to that. But it's interesting because even thinking about exploring the feeling, I think, well, what am I going to feel? I don't want to do that.
That's right.
Because
and
it's
boom,
so
there goes the clamp. Right,
right, exactly.
I'm afraid
right.
of that. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it. There's the clamp. And what that clamp means is just stop it. Don't walk down that path, because if you do, you're going to find yourself in a scary place where you're going to be out of control, feeling a bunch of stuff that's going to be really dangerous to you, and you're going to be really sorry. So just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next piece of this is that conditioning learns to take full advantage of that. So if you're going to do something that will be threatening to conditioning,
it uses it as a tool.
That's right. It puts clamps in place, clamps it down. You just immediately jump to, oh, that's right, no, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you've probably also noticed that self-hate comes in and beats you up.
Of course.
For being a quitter.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah. Huh.
Okay, so that's just something for you to kind of play with as you're doing
okay.
this. And again, my encouragement, start. Get to day two. Watch
okay.
the clamp come in. Just look at it. You know, what is it? Come on. You know, it's a feeling in my intestines. You know, how can that be the thing that rules my life? What is this? And
mm-hmm.
and just see what, you know, if it's too scary and you want to stop, great, then start again the next day.
Okay.
And keep doing that until you get some clarity about what's happening with you.
All right. It sounds like, well, it kind of sounds fun.
And then let us know.
Okay, I will call back.
All right, good.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Monique. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Christina from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Thank you. And to you, too. What's going on with
Thank
you this
you.
Evening?
This isn't what I want to talk about, but I want to briefly say that I've been hating my friend because she hates herself. So I bought her There Is Nothing Wrong With You because I think there's something wrong with her because she thinks there's something wrong with her.
And who is this she?
Well, the she and me or the she, her. My friend, I just can't stand being around her self-hate.
Uh-huh.
So I buy her There's Nothing Wrong With You because I think there's something wrong with her.
Uh-huh.
So I have that going. I actually want to talk about something else, but if we want, we can talk about that too.
Well, I am interested in that, and then we can talk about something else. But I'm wondering if you're owning the projection in this.
A little, but I don't know how to behave. Like, I can say to myself, wow, it's... All I hear is hatred. I hear, like, if you just loved yourself perfectly, you wouldn't mind what anyone else had going on.
So her self-hatred
yeah.
triggers your self-hatred.
Yeah, and I get scared.
You want to fix her
yeah.
so that you don't have to face yours.
Probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
And so can you see that it would be a much more honest and direct route to go on and fix yours?
Yeah. And I don't know if this is, I think there's some legitimacy and maybe there's not. I think, aren't I allowed to just not want to be around it too?
Oh, sure. We can do anything we want.
Yeah, because that's what I think is, I think I just don't want to be
right, but
around it. Yeah.
Of course. Of course. That's a huge motivation. You know, people don't want to be around all kinds of people, and they do all kinds of things to those people. But what we're doing is practicing ending suffering.
Right.
And so there's really no end to suffering by making choices like, I don't like what that person is doing to herself, so I just won't be around her, and then I won't have to feel that in myself. But there'll never be freedom in that because there'll always be another her.
Right.
Yeah. So can we do that? Sure. I mean, you know, people can slap their kids and, you know, scream at their partners and, you know, hate their parents and all kinds of stuff. But it's not going to lead to ending suffering.
It's hard because all I hear is, then I'm bad. Like, that's all I hear. So,
the argument is pretty made, right?
Right.
Yeah, so if you have to protect yourself against anything that the voices of self-hate in you can use to point a finger at you and say you're bad, I mean, pretty soon, well, there's nowhere to go. You know, after you move into your closet and vow never
right.
to come out,
right.
you know, the voices are just going to...
go in there, too, yeah.
Yeah, because they're inside you. There's just,
yeah.
there's no escape.
So, I can own it, and where it catches me, is it, I mean, maybe I can't, maybe that's what this whole conversation's about. It just catches me because I don't feel safe being around her, so I could own... that. Like,
sure, you don't feel safe being around your
right feet. My conditioning, yeah,
which is intelligent
because it tells me if I love myself perfectly in this right way, it wouldn't bother me.
Well, and that's self-hatred. You know, the fact that it's using the word love doesn't mean that it's not hate.
Yeah.
So there's the, you know, the perfect place to work. Okay, so that's what the voice tells me. I need to get it that's self-hatred. I need to stop believing that. I need to counter that in myself so that I can see it for what it is and be free of it. Not let it manipulate me into doing this but not that, or being around that person but not that person, or being around that person but not under those circumstances. You know, once we go down that road of letting conditioning dictate our life experience, you know, we're just it for a little while it can seem like it works, and then increasingly we realize, whoa, I just made a pact with the devil, and it's only going to get worse.
Well, I guess this is good because I really showed up. I'm in it, so this is, yeah, I'm stumped.
Well,
yeah, can I own it? I don't know if I can.
Yeah.
You
know, the one that I like to offer people is, you know, we wrote a book on parenting, and it's called Time Out for Parents.
Uh-huh.
Now, what parents want is a book that tells them how to put their child in time out.
Right.
Because when the child who's acting out is in time out, the parent feels more calm. But is the parent legitimately more calm? No. It's just that the parent is able to seem to be more calm when all of these stressors are not present. But once again, there's no freedom in that. So if, you know, if I say to Gwendolyn, you know, yes, you can put your child in timeout, but, and that makes you feel better temporarily because the child's at the other end of the house and things are a little quieter and you feel like you can breathe and get calm. But going down that road is simply going to set up a situation in which there is an illusion that if I just control the externals, I will be all right. So now I'm going to control this external, and then I have to control that external, and then I have to control that external, and then I have to control that external. Okay? And then what she says to me is, well, I feel like what you're saying is that that makes me a bad person. Okay. So the dilemma that conditioning has now got her stymied by is that unless she does what conditioning says, she's a bad person.
Right.
Yeah. And so what we're doing is just stepping back, and then conditioning comes up with that argument. We step back again, and it says what's wrong with that step. And then we see through that, and we step back again, and it says what's wrong with us for having taken that step. And what we begin to realize is that's just what it's going to do. It's not, it doesn't mean it's true. That's just what conditioning does. That's just what it says.
Right.
Yeah. So it doesn't mean Gwendolyn is a bad person or a bad mother for taking that approach. But if she wants ever to be free,
right,
she has to be all right when that kid is, you know, throwing itself on the ground and turning blue and whatever else is going on.
Right.
It's not a should. This is a volunteer army.
Right.
It's just for the person who says, I don't want it to be conditional.
Right. Huh. So I just had an interesting experience. When you're talking, I remembered something I've been telling everyone lately, which is like, how funny. I can't even, some parts of me can't tell the difference between good and bad, and just like, it's not helpful.
Yeah.
Which is something I heard you say. And so that was funny that I have been telling everyone that, and I can only just barely apply it to this. Just like barely.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not bad.
To me, the two points are, does this lead toward suffering?
Right.
Or does this lead away from suffering?
Right.
Has nothing to do with good and bad.
Right.
Nothing does.
So when I'm, like, behaviorally in the moment, I mean, first of all, I know it's I know intellectually it's a projection. I don't know that she's hating herself. That's really none of my beeswax. And then I just get involved because I start to get voices that say, well, if she's this insecure and self-absorbed and hating on herself, any second it's going to turn toward me.
Right,
and
so
scared, and I don't want to be close to her.
That's your best opportunity to hear that voice, see what it's projecting, because what it's really saying is, you know, you have to take it a step back.
Okay.
So it's telling you if she's being that way with herself, she's going to be that way with you. Mm-hmm. But that's a projection. So what that voice is actually saying is, this is how she is. This is how you are. This is how I am with you.
Uh-huh. Right.
And it did it. If you're going to be that way with her, then before long, I'm going to be that way with you. And it was.
See, then now it's telling me it's twisting what you're saying, because I get it, and then it just grabs it, and it's like...
Right. Yeah. Now, see, the thing about it is, what it wants you to believe, what we're conditioned and taught to believe, is that you have to understand.
Yeah.
But you don't have to understand it. What is important is for you to see what you just saw. That's what it's always doing. It's always grabbing it and twisting it, grabbing and twisting. It's like a politician.
Yeah.
And so we believe, oh, we have to understand the issues. And then if we understand the issues, then we'll know what these people are doing. Or you could just notice, you know, as far as I can tell, that person is a crook. That person is twisting everything,
Right.
Now, then we'd say, well, but that's a projection. Yes, it is a projection. If I were doing that, that's what I would be doing.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I feel a little bit better now. I'm really young. So does this mean I have to be her friend forever and let her do whatever she wants to me?
What do you think?
The adult answer is no, but
right.
I just don't get it. She does project.
All that we're required to do is pay attention. It has nothing to do with behavior.
Yeah.
All we're doing is paying attention.
Yeah.
Is this leading toward suffering or away from suffering? You know, in Buddhism, there are these folks called bodhisattvas,
mm-hmm.
and they are enlightened beings who live as ordinary people
mm-hmm.
to assist ordinary people to become enlightened beings. Okay? And so you might find a bodhisattva on a bar stool in your neighborhood bar.
Right.
Okay? Because that's the place where the bodhisattva can be of the most assistance to drunks.
Right.
Okay? Not in a,
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So in that way, what it demonstrates to us is when we're free,
mm-hmm.
it truly doesn't matter what's going on with anybody else.
Yeah, and I know that in my heart, and then that was one of the first things I said, but I said it through ego says it. You know, if you were just free enough,
that's right,
you would be fine with this or whatever.
Yes, what it's saying is absolutely so, but the spin it's putting on it, the way it's grabbed it and twisted it, turns it into something that is self-hatred.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, thank
you. Your assignment, should you choose to accept it,
is to try to own the projection.
And go out there and pay attention.
Okay.
Let everything enlighten you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you, Sherry.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Christina. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I really enjoyed that conversation.
Yeah, we've had some good heart-to-hearts tonight.
Yes, yes. We have just a couple minutes left here, and we have one more caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome John from Los Angeles. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Well, how are things in your life?
I've had better days.
Uh-huh.
But I have 2 minutes, and
I bet you've had worse days, too.
As a matter of fact, I have.
Isn't that always good to keep in mind?
I think at this point it's a good idea to keep that in mind, yes.
Uh-huh. So what's going on?
Well, I guess I have 2 minutes, so I'll be really quick. I think that at the moment I'm pretty identified with conditioning has sort of co-opted my practice, which has sort of been the theme of what I've been listening to all evening.
Uh-huh, because conditioning will co-opt anything.
Yeah, and it did a great job right after that last retreat, and it sort of started showing me, you know, in sort of gentle ways, oh, look, you broke that precept, oh, look, you broke that one. And then it started saying, well, look, if you're going to break the precepts, then you must not be a great Buddhist. And then it sort of spiraled down from there.
It's funny, isn't it? It's like, pardon me, did I ever say I'm a great Buddhist?
Yeah.
You know, somebody gets into that kind of thing with us, and we forget that we don't have to participate.
You broke
a precept.
I'm shocked by how hooked it is. And I know that, but it's funny listening to... It's so always amazing to me, because listening to the conversations that occurred preceding this, it's just so similar to what I'm experiencing, that everything you're saying is relevant.
Yeah, because we're all exactly alike.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one of the big weapons that conditioning has is making us think that we're the only one. What if we all really got it, that we're exactly alike?
that there isn't anything wrong with us and that we're just being scammed by this really huge, deep, vast brainwashing system. So that we think that this voice that talks to us inside our heads is who we are and that it knows something. What if we got it that's what's going on? Can you imagine how fabulous that would be?
I think I would prefer that personally.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the only reason, of course, that it doesn't happen is that we're all convinced at a really early age that we're the only one and we have to keep it secret and we have to hide out and that we have to count on that voice to give us the real, true information because that's the one that's going to keep us safe.
Well, I'll try and stop listening and I'll keep listening to the guide.
And remember that it's a fine day. It's a fine day to pay attention.
I agree. Thanks, Sherry. I'll call again.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, John. Sherry, another great show. Sherry, are you there?
Yeah.
Thank you for another great show.
Thank you, Michael. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Good night.
Bye.